scholars struggling with under $2 a day. Holler, it's an honor of y'all. I rhyme spray, activists get dismissed by that old hat Castro. And the state is only in it for the cash flow.
Welcome back to Voices from the Front Lines. This is Tammy Bang Lu with my co-host Damon Azali on KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara. We'd like to welcome Bruce Dixon on the show. He's the editor of Black Commentator, an online progressive black journal. He joins us to discuss his recent article on the need for black leadership in exposing and opposing Israeli apartheid. Welcome, Bruce.
Thank you.
How
good
are you?
To be here.
Yeah. Great article on Israeli apartheid. It's the title. It was last week's leading cover story. Let's just start off. You talked about the first-class citizens, the second-class citizens, and the 11th-class citizens inside your article. Talk to us about those three citizens and what their lives are like.
Well, actually, it's a little, I mean, when you do these articles, you can only do 1,200 or 2,000, at most 3,000 words. It's actually a bit more complicated than that. But the basics are, yeah, you've got your first, Israel is a state where the only people who have the rights of first-class citizens are Jews, European Jews. And, you know, within, it calls itself the Jewish state for a very good reason, that first-class citizenship is dependent on your proving and maintaining your Jewishness, as they define it. And there's nowhere in the world where that's congruent with what we think of as modern democracy. You know, but this is a fact that escapes most Americans, or either is not known by most Americans, or one that a lot of us are willfully blind to. And everybody else who's not officially a Jew under Israeli law has fewer rights than first class. The way the article broke it down is that you've got first class, second class, and 11th class. The people of the second class are so-called Israeli Arabs, which are Arabs with Israeli citizenship. They are not allowed to own land in most of the country. They are not allowed to, partake in many of the free educational benefits of society, social security plans, and of course they cannot serve in the army. Many benefits in Israel, many social security and retirement and pension benefits and whatnot, and housing benefits are tied to service, current service or prior service in the army. If you're in the army, they have a draft in Israel, a Jewish-only draft, of course, and you serve a few years, 2 years, 3 years on active duty, and then after that, you'll be on ready reserve status until in your earlier mid-40s. So your first-class citizens are militarized. As I said, the second-class citizens have some rights. They even get representation in parliament. The Israeli parliament is called the Knesset, and Israeli Arabs have some representatives there. And, of course, your 11th-class citizens are not citizens at all. They're Palestinians. And you'd think that Palestinians would live in Palestine and be ruled by Palestinians, but Palestinians live in a few corners of what's left over of, the original land of Israel / Palestine, and that land is steadily being encroached and cut over and sliced up, and it's just an ugly situation that most Americans are not aware of. We call Israel a democracy, but that's far from the understanding that the rest of the world has of it.
So, Bruce, I think that your article is excellent in terms of bridging the gaps to, or not bridging that, mixing the correlation to Bantustans in South Africa and whatnot. I think the question that I have for you is, why does a black commentator talk about Israel as an apartheid state? Where I think, most people in the black community, they don't follow that, they don't have any idea, because a lot of their stuff is shaped by the media. So why is the black commentator taking a stand on this?
Well, we've always talked about how, living in America, we live in a media bubble. Our American media keeps us in a state of ignorance of the rest of the world, and we live in this state that we see things far, far differently than the rest of the world. Modern people in modern societies get most of their information from the media. And, so the quality of that information is of, vastly important to, what kind of a citizen you can be and what kind of citizenship you can exercise individually and collectively. Our media in this country is corporate owned. The amount of news, actual news product that we get has shrunk and shrunk and shrunk. The profession of journalism, there's a marvelous thing that you can find online called The State of the Media, 2006, put out by the Columbia School of Journalism and the Pew Trust, which every year, which says that the ranks of professional journalism are shrinking drastically in print and broadcast media, and there's just less news all around. Our universe consists of Barry Bonds and Angelina Jolie and Beyonce, and we know more about them than we know about our neighborhoods and our government, our local government. And it's just a situation set up where all kinds of awful manipulations of reality can be done. And so then that kind of thing enables us to support a state like Israel, because most Americans honestly don't know what's going on over there, and the media isn't going to tell them.
Yeah, I mean, beyond the U.S. media's protection of Palestine and the propaganda against Palestinian people and the one-sidedness of it, you also talked about how $6 billion U.S. dollars in aid go to the State of Israel. And, I was just reading in the Washington Report on Middle Eastern Affairs, they have a new article by Cheryl MacArthur that's entitled A Conservative Estimate of the Total Direct U.S. Aid to Israel, $108 billion. So in that instance, let's talk about the need for not, you're talking about all folks in the United States to know this, but particularly black folks on our role in helping to subsidize through our tax dollars.
Yeah, the $6 billion is just funds out in the open. That doesn't include the so-called black budgets and things like that. I lived most of my life in Chicago, and Chicago is in Cook County, which is the second largest county in the nation behind L.A. County. And Israel and Cook County have about the same population, about 6 million people. Israel gets more federal money than Cook County, which contains Chicago. Think about that. More federal money per person is spent in Israel than is spent in Cook County and its suburbs. Cook County, Chicago, and its suburbs. That's an awful thing. That's a staggering amount of money. And the question is, what are we spending it on? Israel is essentially a white, high-tech military outpost in the middle of a region full of brown people who are sitting on a large amount of the easily accessible oil in the world. So that's the character of the state we're supporting, and that kind of talks about how important this is to the leadership of our country. It's really important that we understand Israel to be Israel, and its policies make it what we call the moral successor to the apartheid state. Well, that's it. Israel is essentially the moral successor to the apartheid state. There was an anti-racism conference in Durban, South Africa, just a very few years ago, which came out with a formulation that said that Zionism equals racism. And the United States, and this was voted on and approved by representatives of every country in the world, just about, except the United States and Israel. The United States walked in and spent an immense amount of its political capital and muscle trying to shut that conference down, to defund it, mm-hmm. because it was funded through the UN, and to discredit it. But that tells you what most of the world believes. And on this question, Americans live in a bubble. Black Commentator speaks to black people mainly, and anybody else who wants to listen. We like to think of it as black people speaking to ourselves. And so it's important to realize, just as apartheid was important to black people and to human beings of all races, creeds, and colors around the world as an inhuman abomination that needed to end, it's important that we note that apartheid has a successor. And that the parallels with apartheid South Africa are, of course, not exact, but they are many and they are striking. And apartheid South Africa only fell at a cost of millions of lives. Yeah. And lots of horrible things had to happen, but eventually the sun rose on a post-apartheid South Africa. One of the very first things that the new government in South Africa did was they gave up their nuclear weapons. South Africa is the only country, well, aside from some of the breakup Soviet republics, to have had nuclear weapons and voluntarily demobilized them, given them up. You know, so there is hope that, you know, someday we'll see something better. But right now we've got a long way to go. And the first step is realizing what Israel is and what kind of regime we are supporting.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was a great thing to bring up, the UN Conference Against Racism, because it was several days before September 11th. And it was a very important thing. The United States walked out, and two of the main issues was reparations and this Zionism as racism. And one of the things, if folks are interested, you should really pick up Dispatches from Durban from Eric Mann. That can be you can purchase that at the Strategy Center website. But that's really important, is that now that piece of history, at least the book, is helping to keep out the historical memory. But it was shadowed by what happened at September 11th, and the world was calling for an advancement on the issue of reparations for the transatlantic slave trade and then to deal with Israeli apartheid. I mean, one of the questions we were talking about is it's really difficult right now for folks who are critical of the state of Israel and its practices are often equated with anti-Semitism. So we're anti-Jewish. And I think while there's a real obligation for those of us to actually fight against anti-Semitism, even within our own movement, this kind of correlation makes it really difficult, particularly inside the United States, to have any kind of critical analysis of what's going on in the Middle East and what's going on with U.S. dollars.
Well, the Jewish people and the Israeli people, which are probably two different things, have a wonderful, great, and honorable tradition of resistance to illegitimate authority.
That's right.
I mean, you got to say that. Jews in South Africa were among the leadership in the struggle against apartheid.
That's right.
Nelson Mandela's top military commander was a guy named Joe Slovo, a Jew from Lithuania. All right? You know, so, I mean, this, you know, and if you, right now, today, there are vast numbers of the Israeli public who oppose the occupation and who oppose many of the policies of that, you know, of that government which governs in their name. You know, but they're shut out by means that are similar to the means that American citizens are shut out from having a voice in their government. You have demonstrations in Israel that, you know, have 500,000 people marching against the occupation. And if you go online, the biggest newspaper, the biggest and most accessible newspaper in Israel is called Haaretz, H-A-A-R-E-T-Z. And you find it at www.haaretz.com. And if you go there, you will see some of the voices of anti-apartheid, anti-occupation, pro-Palestinian, and humane Jewish people who live in Israel. The range of debate in Israel is far more broad and far more honest than it is here. You know, and so, you know, Americans can take their cue in part from Israeli Jews and from Jews in this country who are speaking out against the atrocities that are being committed in their name. You know, so we've got to vigorously answer this anti-Semitic canard. It's not anti-Semitism to disagree with the policies of the government of Israel. And anybody who says that is just, you know, gee, these are the same people who say, you hate America. You know, I mean, the arguments are about equal in weight.
Okay. Last question, I think, within the last minute. You ended the article saying, someday the sun will rise on a post-apartheid Jerusalem, one that belongs to all the people who live there, of whatever origins. This is bound to happen because Palestinians, as well as substantial numbers of Israeli Jews, do and will continue to resist the regime. They will do what they can. What will we do? So in the
That's
last
the
minute, what can
what
we
will
do?
We do?
Yeah, so then in the last minute, let's end it with what can be done. What can those of us...
start by talking people to people. Talk to your neighbors. If you know a bunch of Christians, if you know any of these Christians who believe this last days nonsense, combat that. Talk to them first. But we've got to start with each other. And that's where it's got to start. That is an unanswered question, and the answer is going to have to be found.
Well, you know, one of the major tactics in taking down the South African apartheid was the divestment campaigns all throughout every single country, divesting from people who supported apartheid South Africa. And that tactic maybe needs to be revisited, starting with inside the United States.
That's a valid and valuable tool that many folks are exploring right now. And so the Anglican Church, I think I mentioned in the article that the Anglican and Presbyterian churches have considered it and have done some limited divestment. It needs to be done more widely.
All right. Well, thank you so much. We had Bruce Dixon from The Black Commentator, and those of you guys that want to pick up his article, go to www.blackcommentator.org. This is your co-host, Tammy Bang Lu with Damon Azali. Thanks for joining us. We'd like to thank our guests, Boots Riley, Nazar Watad, Omar Ofendam, and Bruce Dixon. Today we heard music from The Coup and The Philistines. You can listen to previous Voices shows at www.thestrategycenter.org and send comments to voices@thestrategycenter.org. We'd like to thank our producer, Christine Biosdale, and our production assistant, Lisa Adler, and our engineer, Maggie LaPeak. And we'll stay tuned for next week's Voices from the Frontlines. Don't miss 8 p.m. Strategy Sessions with Antonio Gonzalez. And up next is Beneath the Surface with Susie Weissman.
But I'm a robot with dreams, which I thought was clean. And all the fellas used to talk about you, how you had a drop of aura and a walk about you, necessitated by a beautiful backside.